Welcome to the Joe Contractor Show, a podcast created by three regular Joes. The Joe Contractor Show is a place where trade professionals, business owners, and homeowners looking for solid advice and amusement can hear stories of great success and great failure in the turbulent and unpredictable world of construction. On the Joe Contractor Show, we dig deep into the realm of remodeling and construction. We chat with construction trade professionals, business owners, and homeowners alike. We support local independent contractors and those who put their trust in the hands of these capable and hardworking business owners and tradespeople. We discuss construction and home maintenance from multiple angles, and we do it with compassion, purpose, and humor. Listen, as Lori and Sam, along with a wide variety of guests, explore topics related to construction, home ownership, small business creation, and more. A quick reminder, don't forget to send your questions to questions@joecontractorshow.com. And after you've done that, please take a moment to hit the like button, subscribe, or talk about us tomorrow morning at the local coffee shop. We appreciate feedback and critique, and it lets us know that you're out there and that you care.
Hi, Lori.
Hey, Sam.
How are you?
I'm so excited to see you, Sam.
I'm excited to see you too. It's there's always that little, you sit here before the show goes and we have the awkward little, like, let's start it. And then how do you
start exactly?
Yeah, I like it.
There's a green light.
There should be.
Yeah.
How are things?
Good. We had a blast of snow, which was always fun.
Yep.
And I even took a snow day for my crew.
Oh, good.
It was the wrong one, though.
You did it on the wrong day?
Yeah, I took Monday.
Well, you don't want to do a Tuesday snow day.
No. But it was pretty shitty driving out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, you want a long weekend if you're going to do a snow day. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see, it's, who knows when you're listening to this, but it's 2024, early 2024. How's work been going?
Great until the snow and cold hit for a minute here.
Yeah.
But we've had such a great winter that we're ahead of the game.
That's good.
But then when the weather's crappy, when all my work is outside, it's been a little stressful. But, that's Minnesota.
Yeah.
We roll with it.
Yeah, it could have been much worse this year.
Yeah, how are you, Sam?
Good. It's been slow kind of in super expensive, high-end, handmade tile land. my niche industry. Yeah, but I'm hoping it'll pick up a little bit. Yeah. Plus, we're still working on the software, and we've got Divine Fox Productions is now producing other people's podcasts, including this one.
That's great.
Yeah, so things are good.
Always.
Yeah.
We roll with it.
That's right. Always happy anyway. I'm an optimist. What can I do? all right, so we've got a guest.
We do.
Yeah, would you like to introduce our guest?
I will. I've met him for a minute, so and my new friend, his name is Russ Henry from Minnehaha Falls Landscaping right here in the neighborhood.
Good job. We had a, hi Russ, by the way.
Hey Sam. Hey Lori.
Hi,
thank
Russ.
You.
Yeah.
I had quite a little back and forth about how names can be tough in the moment. Oh, you did great. You did great.
Hey, if you don't remember, I'll try to.
Okay.
Yeah. Might get it right, right?
Yeah, I might. Yeah. It's on my card so I can look it up if I need to.
Yeah, that's right.
That's I know.
We need the name tags, just those ones you carry around with a marker.
I know it says in here somewhere.
Put it even on their back and they don't even know it.
It must be the afternoon of a long day.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you have a long day?
I got about 4:30, yeah.
Yeah, you got up?
Got up, started working at 4:30. I usually do.
Really?
And start right in at 4:30 or do you take
4:30
any...
sleeping in.
Okay.
Yep.
4:30 is sleeping in?
Yep. So my...
Wow.
So. I couldn't hire you. you can't be at my house.
Oh,
five
yeah.
5 o'clock in the morning. How early do you get to a job site?
It's... No. So... I'm running the company, so I've got a lot of office work and design work to do in the early morning hours before I go and meet crews at 7 a.m. at the shop, and then we're usually on site by 7:30 or 8.
Now I get it.
Yeah,
so you're not out in the field.
No,
which is great. No. You're
making noise with your tractors.
No, my alarm goes off, and I reach over and grab my computer, and I start working.
Wow, no coffee.
I'm not a coffee guy.
I remember you had tea the other day.
None of the other intricacies of morning, you know?
Well, there's, you know, there's business that has to be attended to, but, you know.
Thank you.
You know how it goes.
That makes me feel better.
Russ isn't human.
All flesh and bones over here.
No, I have to think, what time do I really start in the morning when you're answering the emails and texts? And I won't let anybody get a hold of me before 7.
Yeah, that's
But good. It doesn't mean I'm not doing an emailing, you know, as I'm having coffee in bed.
Yeah. Isn't it just terrible that, I mean, that we have gotten to the point where, yeah, one of the first things I do in the morning, because the alarm is my phone, it goes off. I lay there for a few minutes. I try to forget it all, and then I'm like, okay, I better just look at that phone.
Yeah,
like I gotta go look at the stuff.
Yeah, I've learned to let go at night. Like I have, I scroll through, and there'll be an email that I'm like, nope, not reading it till tomorrow.
Yeah.
But in the morning, I'm like, nope, don't read it yet. No, yeah, okay, I read it.
Yeah. But you sort of embrace the whole first thing in the morning. You're getting after it.
I've got a limited number of hours and a lot to do, so I just got to jump in. Plus, I have 1.5-year-old twins, and so
really?
Yeah. So if I don't get an early start, you know, they're coming to find me by 6-7 a.m.
They're those kids.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So they're, you know, they got full of energy, ready to play right away.
Boys,
yeah.
Girls, both
identical boys.
Identical
wow.
boys.
Yeah. So oh, that's cool. We're just super lucky. It's the best time I've ever had in my life.
Oh.
And it's, I'm like, okay, I got to figure out when I'm going to get my work done.
That would be so hard.
Yeah, right. I just want to spend all my time with them.
I want to play.
Oh, so. I remember those days.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I think I remember those days.
I mean, it is tough. That's something I don't know that we've brought up on the show before, but working in construction, owning a company when you have kids it's like a whole nother layer of stuff.
Yeah.
Remember when you thought, I'm going to run my own company so I can be there for my kids and have a flexible schedule?
Yeah. And turns out any 80 hours a week you want to work, you can work them.
That's right.
Whatever you want
Super
to pick.
Super flexible.
Whichever ones you choose. They're all yours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's funny but true.
Yeah. I had somebody tell me they only work half days from sun up to sundown.
Oh, God, that's so true.
Yep.
And I do remember when the kids were around and getting up early or staying up late to, you know, get stuff done.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't have an alarm anymore. I do, and so that's pretty nice. But I don't. Yeah. But I get up early.
Yeah.
I mean,
not 4:30, not 5:30, but it's usually by 6:30.
Yeah. And you wake up pretty much at the same point each. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
For years, it's
yeah.
like I have the alarm, but. Yeah. It's inevitably like 3 minutes before it goes
right.
off. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
I know you're coming.
Yep.
So, Russ, tell us what you do.
Oh, well, thanks. I am the owner of Minnehaha Falls Landscaping, and we're an all-organic landscape company. We build and install native landscapes with patios, walkways, retaining walls, fences, decks, the works.
Yep.
Full design, installation, and maintenance. And we have an organic focus and a pollinator-friendly focus. So we're really thinking about soil health, water quality, and our clients' health and well-being at the same time as their needs and their, you know, desire for something beautiful outside.
I'm going to ask this. How many there's so many landscapers, right? But I don't know that many that say what you just said with the organic soils.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that
a little
pollinator
bit? Friendly.
And pollinator friendly.
I know one other relatively recent one in town.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
that's great. And I too know a bunch of landscapers that think like I do, though I know many more that, you know, are just kind of the standard frame. A lot of mow and blow, you know, guys out there that I'm friends with. And, you know, I have friends all across the industry. I have my own particular take on things just because of my experience. You know, I started working in landscapes. Well, I started gardening because my mom taught me how to garden a long time ago.
Oh, nice.
So
that's sweet.
Thanks to mom.
Yeah.
And then when I was a teenager, I got a job at nurseries, starting in nurseries. And the first nursery I worked at, I owned my first house just a few blocks away. So I'd bring home the products and plants and stuff from the nursery, and I'd use them, plant them up at home. And I was bringing home, you know, petunias and marigolds and tomatoes and all the good stuff. And then all the products off the shelves too. So the Miracle-Gro and the Milorganite and the Roundup and the, you name it, you know, bringing it all home and,
right.
and using it all. And if you guys know where Chaska is, it's down by the Minnesota River. And I was right there by the river, just three houses from it, in this beautiful, rich soil. And within 3 years, my soil was cracked and gray. And I was going, what's happening here? You know, I didn't even think to myself, what did I do?
Right.
I just knew something was wrong. And then turns out I got a job at another place that a few years down the road, they're showing me a garden. I'm walking through, this is a landscape company, and I'm walking through, noticing these echinacea, these coneflowers in their gardens, and they were just huge. And so I remember I was asking the person I was with, my manager, I said, so, wow, these are enormous. These must be 20 years old, you know? And they said, yeah,
How did these grow like this?
How did they get so big? They said, oh, no, those, you know, we put those in last year. I said, well, how'd they get so big? What kind of Miracle?
How much fertilizer are you dumping on these things?
And they said, no, Miracle-Gro, it's all compost. And then, so then I was like, okay, what is that? And then that started me on a pathway of learning. And it turns out the U of M used to make some prime compost, really good stuff. And they had their ag students making it with all the animals from the programs there. And it was just...
It was manure, right?
It was manure-based.
We used to go get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd give it away for free.
Doing that.
I don't know.
They got a contractor in to handle it all, you know. Why would you have your students learning when you can privatize something?
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, let's just crack this country open and see what it's worth.
A lot of things ruined by that, yeah.
Yep. So... anyway, that's where that compost was so powerful when I first started my own company in my early days, that it made my gardens grow so fast, and my clients were extremely impressed, and they thought I was brilliant. And it was a pile of shit, really. That was
right.
That was really doing all the magic, all the work.
Do you see what he did there?
So I really wanted to understand more, and then I wanted to offer my clients more services. So we started out really, honestly, just as a gardening company, because that was my favorite thing. And then over time, you know, we added lawn and snow and hardscapes and then construction, and we got a remodeling license, you know, everything. And moving into lawn was kind of a big move, knowing that, you know, I wanted to avoid, because by that time I'd also learned about the dangers of pesticides. Mm-hmm. So I knew I wanted to avoid them. And I also wanted to serve my clients year round. And, you know, there was a demand for it for me. So I went about learning how to manage lawns organically. And that's not easy.
Oh, all of South Minneapolis is in turmoil right now with all these grubs and everything.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. Yeah, the last couple of years.
Yeah. And the real deal is that we're all getting ripped off with the concept of a lawn anyway.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know,
Our purely monoculture lawn.
What's it doing for
us?
Yeah,
right.
It's green concrete. It's running the water off. We're having to, you know, maintain it with time and money and poisons. Our own health is going away just to have this stupid lawn. And who does it really serve? Well, you know, when you just back up and look at it, and I'm not faulting anybody, okay?
I get it.
It's
not
really
controversial here.
It's just really good for developers. Because you go and you make a new, you know, development, and what are you going to pay $1 million a house to have the landscape done? No, you're going to get the cheapest possible ground cover you possibly can.
Yep.
That sod, you're going to slap it down, and then that becomes the default look, you know, the aesthetic of a new neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And what's better than a new neighborhood? You know, nothing, right? And so then we equate that wealth and that success with
for sure
the lawn, and that's it's always been that way since, from what I understand, and I wasn't there, but since, you know, European royalty way back would have their slaves, you know, having the lawn instead of in field production of wheat and everything else, because they could say, hey, look how rich I am. I can just have this lawn to walk
on. I have this place. I don't even need to use it.
This vast nothing.
And I have tons of money to pay for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
To try and keep it growing.
Right. Exactly.
The British aristocracy.
Yeah. What do they do to us? Let's get some tea and throw it in the harbor.
There's a way to deal with this. No, it is. I understand what you're saying. It goes, we tend to follow trends. So like, you know, all the gables on people's houses or whatever, all these things that you look at it and you're like, well, this is all false. None of this makes any difference here. And it's a lot of wasted energy.
Costs a lot more money.
A lot of places for
energy failure. Energy loss.
Yeah, for failure to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's because that's what we look at and we think that means something, that money or something. I don't know.
The good news is that that's changing.
I think it is, yeah.
I do maybe 300 consultations a year and on-site at clients' houses. And in those consults, I'm encountering homeowners in every different stage of home ownership. Brand new homeowners all the way to people ready to move out and go to the retirement home. And I'm telling you, the new homeowners, every one of them saying to me, this has to be low maintenance. Whatever we're doing has to be low maintenance.
Totally.
And when I dig into that, I dig into that, it means no maintenance.
Yeah.
And they want to feel good about it being environmental, ecologically friendly. They really don't want the pesticides and the poisons and the kind of rigmarole.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they kind of, I think people are recognizing it as a trap, because the other thing that lawns are great for is supporting the lawn industry.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and I mean, where would we be without the lawn industry?
Right.
We wouldn't be, you know, maybe able to sleep in a little bit later.
Anymore.
Look, I'm saying this as a lawn guy. You know what I mean?
He's just a guest.
There goes Monsanto. Damn it.
Yeah.
We just about had him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So tell us what you do, or I know there's a lot of options, but why don't you tell the folks that you know what options they do have that are listening.
Thanks for asking. That's a great question. The landscape can be used for so many different purposes, and it really depends on what people are trying to do and get out of their landscape. So for a lot of folks, we're starting with the concept of a bee lawn. So that's a pollinator-friendly lawn. A lot of clover in the lawn and yarrow and other plants that bloom, feed bees but stay low and are drought resistant and walkable, don't need to be mowed. And so we can make a lawn. We do make lawns all the time entirely out of these plants, and our clients have no maintenance to do for their lawns for the rest of forever. And then what that does is anytime they decide, actually, I'd like to have a garden in that space, or I'd like to put a tree or a shrub over there. Well, what we've done is installed, you know, we've had that bee lawn growing there for so long or for however long, it's been enriching the soil the whole time. So now you can go and put anything you want. It's kind of like having where a lawn is weak in so many ways, it kind of flips that on its head. It adds health to the soil. It feeds the pollinators. You don't have to maintain it. It's, you know, so it's just a really nice option. Then from there, we're thinking about, well, maybe some folks want to have a prairie garden or bring that edge to edge and have a full meadow. And then we get taller and maybe people are growing a food forest with native plants that'll feed people and wildlife. So we can be very creative. And I love to have a nice patio with a seat wall at right in the middle of this kind of wild space where I can be immersed in nature. That's what I have over here in Longfellow neighborhood. And I've lived there. I had lived there for 15 years. And then when the kids came along, we moved out to out to Anoka County, kind of up on the edge of the wilderness there.
Where we're at.
In Ramsey on the right between, our land straddles Ramsey and Nowthen.
Yeah, I grew up in Elk River.
So, oh, great.
Yeah, just down the road.
I'm actually closer to Elk River than to Ramsey. I love Elk River. It's a nice little town.
You have more land now.
I can really get that feeling of being just surrounded by nature.
Yeah.
I love that feeling.
I've been envisioning it as you talk. I can see it.
I know.
My little land, my little yard.
you see more and more kind of natural yards.
happening around.
Yeah, here's what I'm gonna just throw in something that someone I know that a caller would call and say, but Russ, I'm gonna get stung by all those bees.
Oh, those dang bees
are fine.
Those mean old bees. You know, if anybody is risk averse when it comes to stings, it's the Minneapolis school system, and they had us come and install clover for them. Nobody's gotten stung from it. It's in all of the park lawns already because it's white clover is something that seeds itself around. And so, you know, we've got bees everywhere. Now, if your bees are hungry, like me, they might be in a bad mood if they're too hungry.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, well, I guess that's different, but like you don't bite people, do you? Like when you're hungry, so it's different. Your stinging is different.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Did you say you had breakfast today? How long ago was that? That 4:30 might. Yeah. Sam, he's going to get hungry.
Well, I did have a little bit of chocolate before I came in. Keep the mood light. But if you're feeding the bees, they're going to be too busy eating to be bothering with you. The trick with every lawn always is be careful where you're walking barefoot, because if you step on a bee, you're going to get stung if you step on any kind of stinging insect. And I don't know that you're more likely to step on a bee in a bee lawn than you are in a standard lawn.
And there's lots of different kind of bees, right?
Lots.
So it's those are the nice bees, nicer bees maybe?
Oh, yeah, we hang up a sign. We have a bouncer. Only the nice bees. No bad bees today.
I know what you're talking about, though, because it's every year it's the same thing. We've got, I have no idea what these flowers are in our front yard, but they're purplish, and they've always got bees all over them in the fall. Awesome. And they're the little, they're the honeybee type bee or whatever, right? And then sometime in the late fall, then the little yellow jackets come out. And is that a bee or a wasp?
Well, so, you know, wasps and bees are not that distantly related.
No, I mean, I assume they're kind of like close cousins.
Pretty close cousins.
Kissing and cousins.
And wasps, you know, there's lots of different kinds. So it'd be hard for me to say without, you know, and I'm certainly no bee expert, you know, not an entomologist. I couldn't tell you exactly what's going
on. But there's just this point in the late summer or fall where
they're very aggressive.
Yeah, they get, like, if you have a soda can out or whatever, they're going to be
beer.
Or a beer, they're going to be all over it, right?
And
there's nothing you can do about that, and everyone's swinging at them, and I'm like, just leave them alone.
That's why we stopped the soda can lawns. That was not working. all those angry wasps. I just think if they're at the buffet and they got something to eat, they're going to be distracted. And that's been my experience. We've probably installed about 1,000 bee lawns at this point. And I haven't had anybody, I ask everybody, are you getting stung? Because everybody asked me.
It's so funny. That's just not a fear of mine, I guess. So I like the fear of getting stung is not.
It wasn't a fear of mine until I started swelling up.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely a legitimate fear for a lot of folks. And so when I do have clients who have an allergy and they're still curious about bee lawns, you know, we really suss it out. We really talk it out, because I certainly don't want to feel like I've been responsible for somebody getting hurt.
No, of course not. But you're not installing crocodile lawns. I mean, like there's a lot of other things.
Wait till we open our Florida branch. It's going to be fun.
Well, those would be
Can't
alligators.
Wait to see that yard.
But, oh, yeah. If you're importing gonna have to crocodiles, that'd be.
Depends on where you're at. If you're down there a ways, you might be a crocodile or two.
Yeah, or rattlesnake friendly lawns or whatever. Like
it does show you Minnesota's a real easy environment to live in. There's really not a lot of dangers.
No, I know when my wife lived down in Virginia for a bit and my kids were young, and we went to a friend's house, and one of them stuck his hand inside of a log to grab something, and he was like, they can't do that here. Like, there's too many things that'll, too many spiders and or snakes that'll get you.
Somebody's going to be waiting in that log for sure.
Yeah. But we don't have that here, really. We have very few things other than bees, but bees.
You could psych yourself out thinking about northern pike and snapping turtles when you're swimming, but it's not going to happen. They're not going to bug you.
No, never. I've been around that world a lot, and no, they don't bite you.
They don't.
They don't? The snapping turtles, don't they grab your toe and pull you under?
No. There you go. That's just what grandma told you.
Tell the kids. stay close to shore now.
No, generally they're not going to do that. That's funny though. So
what was it, Minnehaha Falls?
Landscaping, yep.
Landscaping?
Yep.
And how long have you been in business?
Okay, so that's a long, a little bit of a long answer here. We've got a 70-year-old company.
Okay.
I started my first company in 2005. And that company's called Giving Tree Gardens. We tucked that inside the brand of Minnehaha Falls Landscape in 2017 when I purchased,
yep,
bought the company.
And it wasn't a family deal? It wasn't?
Down the street deal.
Down the street deal.
They came to me. I was a neighbor down the street.
Yep. Fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great opportunity. I kind of had been thinking, geez, I wish I had that company.
Yeah.
For a while, and then they came over and said, hey, you want to buy it? And I said, oh, okay, yeah, sounds good.
I was just saying that today. When there's something thrown in right in your lap, what do you do?
You
walk away? No way. Yeah.
It was a good price.
Yeah.
It worked, you know, and then we were able to, because Minnehaha Falls Landscape was doing services that I wasn't at Giving Tree Gardens, and then vice versa, we were able to combine and make a much stronger company. And transition the whole company to organic, and this focus on, you know, pollinators and native plants, which in terms of business, and I'm not really, you know, I never went to a business class in my life or anything like that. You know, started with the shovel kind of guy.
That's a lot of us in construction,
right?
Or this field, you know.
I guess as far as I know, in business, we've done all right.
Yeah.
You know, we've kept growing.
And you're still growing.
Still growing.
Yeah.
And you, how many employees do you have?
We've got 15 to 20, depending on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Full season, you know, full blown middle of the summer, we're 20 employees running around.
And in the winter?
15.
And then what are you doing?
We're doing snow removal. So we do snow removal for 9 school sites and 75 or so residences.
So did you make bank this year or did you lose your ass? Because it's, you know, if you have contracts, don't they have to pay you anyways?
Well, yeah, you got to set your contracts up right. So I've been in it a long time, and my contracts reflect every year they get updated. You know, they reflect everything I've learned all along the way.
Yeah.
So residential contracts are pay per month regardless, and then pay more if it snows more.
Right.
And then the school contracts for pay per time. And so that helps balance out. So then when my guys are in the field doing residences and schools, you know, basically I'm losing money for them for every hour they're out doing residences. And then they start making their money back when they're doing schools at the per hour. And the way snow works, generally speaking, for most landscape contractors, and I could be wrong, but I believe for everybody I've talked to, is you don't really make money at it.
That's exactly
unless you're putting
what I was
a lot of salt down. Salt is the only way to make money in the business, and we hate salt.
Right.
Like, I don't use it.
No.
I try not to. I try to get my clients not to use it. We have some clients that utilize it, and then I've taken the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's salt training and, you know, how to minimize. But it's still, 1 teaspoon permanently ruins 5 gallons of water. So yeah. We gotta figure out a different solution.
We do.
And why is it a moneymaker? Why is that the part of it that's a moneymaker for people?
Well, okay, it's a two-parter. One, the material is really inexpensive.
Yeah, dirt cheap. Yeah,
dirt cheap. And then two, how much did I just put down? How much does a ton look like to you spread out over a parking lot?
Right.
So the contractors can say they put down, you know, oh, I put down 5 ton of salt at your target last night, and they put down 1 ton, and it cost them pennies on the dollar for what they're, so it's a really good markup. And
wow.
You want to have as many salt clients as possible if you're a contractor. Now, again, I don't do it because it's an environmental ripoff.
Right.
You know, it's just robbing tomorrow.
Huh. I'm learning stuff.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah, I mean, I think about that. We had new neighbors move in a couple of years ago, and one of the first things they did was put down a bunch of cardboard on the lawn out front. And I'm like, what are you doing over there? You know, we're friendly with them. Making a garden. And then so they killed the lawn, you know, and made the whole front yard is now a garden.
Cool.
And it started this little trend around the block. And they've got, butterflies and bees and all sorts of little critters running around in their yard. And they've got food and whatnot. I love that stuff. But
could be worse, you know. It could be
I love it.
Mowers and blowers all day long.
Yeah.
You know? True.
We've never spread any chemicals on our lawn. I I don't blow the leaves. I just mow it a bunch, but which is probably not great either. I don't know, but it's we live so close to the lakes. I always figure like it's not good to be dousing these lawns with chemicals all the time.
So they're animal friendly as well. Yeah, it's not just bee friendly, right?
Oh yeah, pet friendly. You know, because the pets are getting cancer like crazy.
Yeah.
The dogs are getting a lot of cancer in their nasal passages. And, you know, because they're extremely sensitive noses. And then in the space that we put the dog to have its dog time, it's filled with poison.
Right.
And this horribly stinky poison.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I hadn't even put that together yet.
Yeah, the dog associations are talking about how much cancer is going on with the dogs.
Huh.
Yeah.
And their sense of smell, that makes sense.
I mean, they're right in there.
Yeah.
All right, you two. Well, we've gone through a half hour here. Let's our first half of the show. So
let's take a little
break and we'll come back.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great.
Good time? All right. Cool.
We will be back to the show after a few quick ads from our valued sponsors. Wonder Woman Construction is a Minneapolis-based, woman-owned residential and commercial construction and electrical company. Lori and her team pride themselves on their commitment to long-term, green, and sustainable building practices, and they apply their deep understanding of building science to each project they take on. They are dedicated to the complete satisfaction of every client. One more thing that you absolutely cannot miss about Wonder Woman Construction is the fact that every employee loves what they do and truly enjoys working with each other. The best projects are those that are done by happy people, and Wonder Woman Construction is full of happy people. Visit WonderWomanConstruction.com to get started on your happiest project ever. Kinetic Legacy is the company that powers the Joe Contractor app. Their unique platform blends the good parts of social tech with their one-of-a-kind data organizing system, giving communities large and small a safe, private space to stay connected and to keep information and memories organized. If you and your community have a shared purpose or passion and are looking for a better way to stay connected, contact Kinetic Legacy today at kineticlegacy.us. Find out how groups from contractors to campers, tribal communities, unions, and alumni organizations are finding their way to meaningful new spaces in this increasingly digital world. Again, that's kineticlegacy.us. The Joe Contractor Show doesn't let just any old company put an ad in the middle of a show this important. They have to pay us. Send us an email if you're certain your business should be featured on our show.
We're back.
We're back.
You can't see us, but we're back.
Oh, you started it off that time. That was great.
So we have our guest here, Russ Henry from Minnehaha Falls Landscaping, and we're learning a lot about landscaping and the whole healthiness and sustainability that we do in our construction industry. At least some of us do, and some of us are doing it in the landscape industry, and then we put it together and you've got a beautiful house and home and
inside and out.
Yeah, inside and out.
Spaces for people to live.
What's your favorite part?
My very favorite part of all the work that we do is really surrounding the plants and the gardens and soils. And so I've always been scientifically curious, you know, just really wondering what makes the world move? Mm-hmm. What makes, you know, why is that butterfly going that way? What's happening? And playing with plants and soils brings that right to your doorstep.
For sure.
Yeah. So I have so much fun installing native plants at my own house and always have, and then bringing that around and getting to drive through the city and through the suburbs and say, well, there's one of our landscapes. There's one of ours, you know. It's such a good feeling to see the butterflies floating around at one of our landscapes that we've installed. Nice. You know,
what's your favorite tree or bush or plant or flower?
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
You got to pick one.
Yeah.
Just your favorite.
No, it can be one in each category. I want to see if I'm on the right path here.
Oh, you got an idea, do you?
No, I don't know. I'm not.
I just was reminded of when Terry Gross asked Mick Jagger what his favorite Rolling Stone song was, and he said, "Terry, don't ask me to cut the baby's head off."
Terry Gross, she's so sweet.
He was probably half
tough,
lit.
Tough. She was getting
That's
tough
hilarious.
Too.
So as far as plants goes, wow, I just
what about
so
trees? Because you know, you look around here right now and look at all the wood in the shop that, you know, we're making doors wood, and so we do hardwood. You know, I don't know my trees. If you cut it down, I'll tell you what kind of tree it is. But you know, what I do, like hardwoods, softwoods, tall,
well, you know, the way I think about trees is in terms of how they're,
that's what we want to know. Yeah.
what number of species they're supporting in the ecosystem.
Oh,
so the trees that support the largest number of species in our Minnesota ecosystem, or in any given ecosystem, we would refer to those as keystone species. And here in Minnesota, the trees and shrubs that support the biggest number of moth and butterfly caterpillars, which I'll come back to in a moment.
I've got things to talk about with this. I love this.
Yeah, this is good.
Those are the native willow trees and shrubs.
Really?
And followed second very closely by oaks and wild cherries, poplars, so quaking aspen and cottonwoods, then, you know, others, dogwoods very close up in there too.
Okay.
But the caterpillars, the reason that we would call these willows that can support, there's 22 species of willows in Minnesota. Sorry, weeping willow is non-native and doesn't support maybe three species of moth and butterfly caterpillars.
Oh, that's funny, because a lot of people would think of right away.
Right. But the native willows can support 350 plus species of moth and butterfly. And what that means is, so all of the animals, not all of them, but very many animals are relying on caterpillars in the early spring to get their fats. Because caterpillars are more efficient at turning plant material into fat than anything else at that time of year. And they're doing it in such a scale that it's enormous. So if you think about, you know, Doug Tallamy is a writer who helps me think about, helps us all think about the amount of caterpillars that are required. So just mom and dad chickadee, right? The little bitty babies, the little bitty songbirds. They're raising babies every early summer, maybe two or three babies for 3 or 4 weeks. And in that time, how many caterpillars did mom and dad have to bring back per baby?
Oh, good question. Go, Sam.
Oh, God. Per baby for 4 weeks, I'm guessing 800.
Nice guess.
I'd say 100.
3,000.
What?
3,000 per baby.
Yeah.
No.
So if they've got three babies, they got to find 9,000 caterpillars in 3 or 4
They're
weeks.
They're really efficient at that stuff, though.
Wow.
Well, they are, and it's super important. That's why it shows that it's so important to have these tree species that can support all this breadth of species of caterpillars, because then we can feed everything else.
God, this brings up so much
I
stuff.
I know.
You know, I grew up on a farm that had a certain portion of it was left fallow or whatever for, you know, a lot of it was corn.
Yeah.
Right. But there was an area, and man, I mean, the number of bugs in a square inch of that place, it was just like so crazy, the number of caterpillars, grubs under the ground, grasshoppers, little things flying all over the place. Like it's insane in those spots. But what you made me think of is another thing, which is, are there, this is just a sort of a human tendency. If we look at the things that support the most, which I completely understand and I like it, is there a possibility that there's like a certain type of tree out there that only supports three, but that if it doesn't exist, those three don't exist?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I don't know that it's necessarily usually with tree species that it's like that, although I could be wrong. But certainly lots of little plants.
Yeah. I mean, we need
that are corresponding with specific pollinators that need the pollen from that plant in order to get the medicines they need in order to perform their life cycle.
Yeah. So, and that's why it gets a little tough when humans start to pick favorites, because they're like, oh, but I love the monarchs or whatever. So we got to plant this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, you're like, well, but that's to the detriment of these other.
Now we got to do the other. Yeah, we got to change this. So does the tree trust take that into account when they offer up the trees that they offer up?
I don't know.
Yeah, this is a good question. He's a landscaper.
Yeah. We got him in here.
Answer all our big questions for us.
I love it.
I'd say keep asking them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know that the concept of keystone species and thinking through how many insects any one plant is supporting is as widely spread as it could be yet.
Yeah.
But it's certainly taking off. And Professor Tallamy's work is, he writes a lot of great books. Nature's Best Hope is a really good one. He's got one with oaks in the title. He really loves oak trees, which in Minnesota can support a couple hundred species of moth and butterflies. Mm. And then think about, like, so here's another way that maybe our company's a little different. So I'll walk into a backyard and I'll see a big ash tree. And, you know, we don't do removals. We don't do treatments or anything. You know, we're not arborists. But I will give people advice on the ash trees. And we'll talk it through because I've done the research on it and I've sat through the companies that do the treatments, their presentation. So I'm just going to back up a moment and say, emerald ash borer is a beetle from Asia that is moving through the Midwest, through America, as far as I know, destroying all the white and American ash trees. Mm-hmm. And
a lot of other non-native ash trees too, right? I mean, they're pretty just destroying ash in general.
Yep. Yep. And so they're just, it's devastation. Where I've talked to the state's leading expert on EAB, the emerald ash borer, and she says that 1 in 10,000 trees may survive in the wild. And the presumption there is that they're in contact with such healthy soil organisms that they're able to produce biochems, tannins that other trees in city soils and or suburban soils can't produce.
Yep.
So they'll be able to fight off almost anything. But what I'm seeing when I walk into these backyards is, okay, there's probably a tag that shows that the tree's been treated if it's still standing. So I'll have this conversation about the treatments and I'll explain to the folks that, okay, so, you know, when you sit through the spiel from the salesman, they say, you know, that it doesn't, that it's targeted, okay? But what we have to understand is that they're actually using a systemic insecticide in the tree, and that means it goes through every part of the plant, into the pollen, into the leaves. You know,
it's, are you suggesting that chemical agents might be bad for us down the road at some point? Is that what I'm hearing?
There's a lot of.
I mean, yeah. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah, that was deep sarcasm.
Right. Yeah.
We have been through this before.
It's amazing what we're
doing. This chemical. Yeah. Oh, don't worry. This one won't hurt anything other than the thing we want.
Like, right. If you've heard the word neonicotinoid or neonic, that's the ones they're using.
Okay.
Or in the similar class. And those are 1,000 times more deadly to, more toxic to insects than the previous class of insecticides, which were killing insects just fine. So the thing we're not thinking about that I like people to think about is every spring we walk out and we're breathing in pollen from the wind pollinated trees. Mm-hmm. And when we walk into a neighborhood filled with ash trees that are being treated with systemic insecticide, we're breathing in neonicotinoid when we're in these neighborhoods. And that's everywhere now. That's everywhere in Minnesota now. And the companies are making bank.
Wow.
And they've done zero research on what the effect of breathing in all the neonic laden pollen is. And they're constantly telling people that bees aren't affected, but the science shows us that when the ash trees are in bloom, up to 25% of the pollen in bumblebees' larval chambers is ash pollen.
Wow.
So they're bringing it back to feed to their babies.
Of course.
So are you saying you should just let the trees fall
and
die?
They need to succumb. They shouldn't fall because it's really dangerous because they do get brittle.
But taken down.
Taken down. And the ash, as you know, ash is great. You know, it's excellent wood for building. It's excellent firewood.
Yep.
Basically, you've got a trajectory once your tree gets infected. If you're watching it for an infestation, then you're going to be looking in the upper branches to see if bark is peeling off. Once the bark starts peeling off, the tree's basically a goner. Whether you start treatments or not, one day that tree is going to come down. It's going to succumb to the EAB. And if you start the treatments, you got to think about that as they call it an inoculant, but it's actually a chemotherapy where inoculations are putting a biological agent inside of an immune system of another agent to, so that immune system learns how to fight, whereas chemotherapy is killing everything but the host. Mm-hmm. And when you kill everything but the host with a tree, you're killing nature right there. You're killing soil fungi, nematodes, microarthropods, deaggregating bacteria in the soil, causing compaction and runoff, losing carbon into the atmosphere. I mean, the consequences start rolling, and that's not even to mention the possible human toll.
Yeah, so Russ went science-y on that.
Sorry.
No, no, it's good. It's very good. But what, I'll just break it down for those who need a little more layperson sort of, yeah. You know.
You
little,
said you don't have a degree. Rough. You're, I don't know.
Sounds
see,
like
you
degree.
Don't need one. Yeah.
Us putting chemicals in trees is bad. It just has to be. We should know this. Like, we've been through all of these processes before. So
why doesn't the city why isn't there more word on this? I mean, I should know this and I don't.
Well, we're in America experiencing regulatory capture when it comes to chemicals. And so the companies that are supposed to be regulated are now managing the regulation agencies.
I'm just surprised. I guess I thought that wouldn't be that way. But why am I so surprised?
I would.
Yeah, it's a revolving door.
I would point out that there's a whole nother aspect to it, too. Yeah. And you're right about that. But also, you see this invasive species. It comes from China, right? There's some stigma there. And all of a sudden, it's coming across the country and wiping out what we know and love. Mm-hmm. And so there's this natural tendency to say, oh, well, let's get out ahead of this and create something that'll stop this problem from happening. And that's, we're really just screwing ourselves in that way. We can't just throw chemicals into the trees. We had two big trees in our yard, both ash. Mm-hmm. The back one held on like a champ for a few extra years, but I knew they were both dying. And we had people come out and say, okay, you know, for $3,500 a year, right, we'll plug this thing full of chemicals. And I said, no, you're not. Yeah. There's no way. Trees dying anyway.
But yeah.
And as good a firewood as they make, I cut the back one down. It was a very big project. It took me a long time. And then I got a splitter, and that thing did not want to split. Everyone
the
told
ash
me.
Didn't?
Everyone told me.
It's a lot
me,
like oak.
Yes, except we have not just white ash, and we have like 18 species of ash that have been planted in the cities. And there's a few of them that are like, I think it's elm.
Wiry.
That is just sinewy as all get out. That splitter was just.
Wouldn't go.
But anyway, that's my experience.
I do like elm and ash for woodworking a lot.
Oh, ash
and
is
burning.
Beautiful.
I mean, we don't up north at the cabin. They don't have. There's not very much ash or elm up there.
No.
And so it's oak or ironwood or.
Ironwood burns.
Poplar.
Nice.
You know what else is great firewood is those buckthorns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's
invasive
right.
Species.
Somebody told me that.
If we go out into the forest burn right them. Now and just cut down every mother buckthorn that's out there because there's some big mother bucks. We can cut them down, and that's 6-inch. A very hard wood, very hard. And so you don't even have to split it. You just cut it and it's ready to burn, dry it and ready to burn. And
I did hear that. I forgot.
Well, let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
So you're pretty into the environmental end of this, or the science-y, soil stuff and the tree stuff. You're into this.
I'm always asking forgiveness for being a nerd.
Yeah?
I am. I do a lot of presentations and I find it's... that's just the truth of it. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm just a curious guy.
I think it's great. I love the passion that goes along with it. Because once you open doors, you can't close them.
Right.
That's how I look at it.
One thing I wanted to say related to the ash trees is that we have a lens of wanting to blame the creature. And we want to say, well, that's an invasive species.
That's right.
And what we've done, what we fail to recognize, is we've created an invadable landscape.
100%.
We took the castle walls down when we took away the prairies and the forests. And we said, come on in to all the other species. We made a vacuum. So we can't just point the finger and say, well, those buckthorns or those emerald ash borer, they're the bad guys. We have to stop thinking in black and white terms and start thinking about managing a system Mm-hmm. And building a good team, a good ecosystem team. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you have to have some basic things in place. You got to have good water flow, good water system management. You have to have healthy soils. And our whole culture is really, if you were to look at it from a certain perspective, our whole culture is about destroying soil and water and air, unfortunately.
Just a matter of time.
Well, yeah, that's cheerful.
Forever.
No, but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's we are an invasive species in this country. Yeah. We, Europeans, I guess. Yeah. And we've done this. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Once you've got all of these things here, the planet will survive us. Well, now we're getting real deep about all this stuff, but the planet will survive us, but we can't keep creating monoculture systems or thinking that we can control all of this.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see that they're removing dams on a lot of river, some bigger rivers these days. People are out there concerned about soil. We're hopefully going to put less chemicals into the environment. These are all a good thing, I would say.
Yeah, there's a lot of positivity. So when I'm giving presentations, and I was in front of a high school group once giving a presentation, I was about to end on a note of hope, and I realized what I was doing, and I told the kids, I said, I was about to end on a note of hope, but I think that would be ripping you off. What I need to tell you is that none of this is going to happen without a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And we're working hard as a culture right now, but we're working hard in the wrong direction. We've got to change directions.
Yeah.
So there is hope. There's hope in the kids. That's where the hope is. But the grown-ups like us, we've got to buckle down and do things different so that there can be hope for those kids.
Very true. I mean, it is true.
It's
totally
true.
Come on, sometimes Sam, we can work harder.
I know. No, I'm a complete optimist. I think a lot about all this. I didn't know this was our construction show. I love it. This is what I actually like about the show. This is where the show gets, I don't mind talking construction, but life stuff. But no, I think a lot about all this stuff. And I think, fundamentally, we've screwed ourselves in a lot of ways. And our only hope of writing anything is to just be more decent, take a step back and figure out how to be more decent across the board. Other than that, the planet will boot us out of here if it wants us out of here, and it'll persist. And
another thing I always tell my any friends or relatives that are complacent or even worse,
anti-good.
I'm like, all right, so you guys, you say you love your kids, you say you love your grandkids, and you care about them, but I don't think you do. Right. And they're like, what do you mean? Yeah, of course we do. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't love them.
Not if you're willing to do these things.
Not if you're not, you don't even minimally, you use Roundup. You've got bleach and you've got, whatever you're doing and not recycling, whatever. There's so much you can do just as, we can do that. Isn't that hard? And so I use that line a lot. I'm like, it's so sad you don't care about your grandkids.
Your friends must really enjoy that line.
That's the only way I can get them to pay attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think, Russ, what you're pointing out, actually, and this is, if you're trying to take anything, we're talking about politics a little bit, or the nature of humans.
Sure.
And that's a little tough, but, I mean, it's out there. But in small choices come big things, little things here and there that help fix certain things. And so within landscaping, I know you can't quantify this, but what sort of an effect would it have on our environment if collectively a city like Minneapolis or a metro like Minneapolis, St. Paul just decided we're going to do things better and we're going to mandate what lawns have to be non-chemicalized, let's say, in some way.
We can change the world with our imaginations. We really can. I believe it firmly. And I know that to be true because one day I was sitting at the table having a beer with a friend of mine, And he's an attorney, and he was, this was a number of years ago, and he worked for an advocacy organization and a solar company. And the advocacy organization was, he had previously worked for, and then he was currently working for a solar company, and all about trying to get more solar into the state of Minnesota. So he had actually helped draft a bill that became law to bring in the community solar gardens in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So he and I are sitting there, and he's telling me about these, and he was describing how there would be 25-year leases on farmland, and they'd probably roll over, so, you know, continuous use, and these would be 50, you know, 5 to 50, maybe even 100-acre sites, and so I said, wow, that's amazing. So the farmers are going to, you know, lease you out this land, and then what are you going to do to manage the soils underneath the panels? And he goes, well, I don't know, gravel?
Oh, no.
So I go, okay, all right, so you're going to go to the farmer, and you're going to say, hey, I'm going to rent your land for 25 years, and at the end of that, you're going to have a gravel parking lot where you used to have tillable soil.
Right.
And he goes, oh, yeah, that's not good, is it? I said, but you could tell them that you're going to put in a short prairie habitat that would work really well up under the, because I knew how the panels were arranged. He'd shown me some pictures. I was like, oh, that's plenty of sunlight moving around, splashing around to get up and under the panels too. And there's a lot of spacing with the panels, so lots of room for pollinator habitat. And I said, you know, that would be very low maintenance, bring in, you know, semi-permanent habitat on basically habitat riding these leases. And
does that help regenerate the soil as well?
So he goes, oh yeah, big time.
Yeah,
so he goes, well, would you write something up about this, and then I'll share it with my company? So we ended up doing a presentation for his little company, and then we took that to the advocacy group he used to work for. And they together we went and we put together this little campaign. We went around to the biggest solar companies all operating in Minnesota, and we got them to sign a pledge that if they went and made these community solar gardens, they would plant pollinator habitat underneath their panels. And so all the companies signed the pledge, and then that really smart advocacy organization turned around and asked the Republicans to make those companies accountable to that pledge they had signed. Yeah. Because, you know, if you can play one side against the other, you're going to win, right? And so they did that because the Democrats had brought in the concept, and then, well, we'll make it better, you know? Right. So either way, what ended up happening is that now the state of Minnesota adopted the solar pollinator program, where if the companies had taken a pledge, then they had to follow these certain guidelines and rules written out in state law. And when I went back and I followed through and clicked through the law to see exactly what passed, the specifications.
They were yours.
They were mine. They took and copy-pasted them.
And that was over a beer.
That was over a beer. And that law has been since followed, copied in 23 states.
Wow.
You can change the world with your imagination.
I got goosebumps.
We're That's changing amazing. The world right now with bee lawns. Minnesota started the concept of bee lawns. And it's growing outside of Minnesota. Minnesota is really good about it. They put money from the state level into helping homeowners transition their lawns into bee lawns. And it's starting to spread. This is a concept that could turn in Minnesota alone, there are 750,000 acres of lawn.
Right.
And nationwide, it's, you know, you can extrapolate much bigger.
Yeah, right.
All
yeah.
of that is potential habitat now with the bee lawn concept.
Wow. So there we go. Sam, you can be an optimist yet.
There you go. I mean, I do have, I just can't help it. I am optimistic about the future. But yeah, it's at the same time, I realize.
What a great story. That's
how
amazing.
Difficult those
kind of
fun. Are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how little things sometimes become quite big things.
Yep. Yep. So you just got to, you know, you got to recognize the problems and use the best of what knowledge you have to try and solve them, and just keep working away at it. That's all you got.
Yeah, you do. I agree 100% with that. You just keep going forward.
Yep.
keep kicking that
so,
ball.
So I had, you know, I had a couple of good ideas, but I've had.
You think you're done with them now? You don't have any more?
Well, I can tell you, you know, my average isn't that high. So like, those two, I'm really wearing feathers in my cap about those, but I'm not going to tell you about the rest of my ideas.
Yeah, I get it. I think we've all had a lot of ideas probably over the years.
Yeah.
So you got a family, do you?
I'm really blessed. Yeah, we have identical twin boys, year and a half old, my wife and I.
That's such a fun age. Well, it's so much work.
It's the best time of my whole life.
Right.
I'm having such a blast with these guys. Oh my God, they're so much fun. We have Friday night dance parties. We go out and split wood together. We go out and find bugs and animals and look at the hawks and the eagles and all the
birds.
Brings
you right down to the basics, doesn't it?
Oh, it's the best.
They're so excited about everything.
I know.
Yeah.
And do you do anything outside of all of this thinking and working? Do you do any sort of, got any other hobbies? Something fun you do?
I split a lot of wood.
Do you split a lot
of
wood?
Yeah, we keep the house heated with wood.
Okay.
Yep. So that's nice.
We have that in common. We eat with wood mostly.
Yeah. We got the furnace on for backup if I sleep too long.
And you're out by now then.
You sleep until five.
Wife's like, hey, girl.
Do you source your wood off your own land out there? You got enough for that or no?
Nope. We got 16 acres and most of it's wetland.
Okay.
So couldn't source enough, but I get it from wood from the hood here.
Okay.
Town, you guys know them.
Yeah,
for sure.
They're great.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of splitting of their cut ends that their butt ends that they don't use.
Yeah.
Do they sell that, or do you have to pay for that? Some people do.
It's okay. So I'm realizing right.
he did stop there. For a second.
I'm realizing right now I'm giving away my fishing spot.
I know.
And I should shut up.
Did you hear
I'm just
me?
Gonna
I'm
shut
like,
up.
How much? Free. I'm right in there.
So, but if you're burning wood, you should check out your local mills, and they got more than enough. You know,
that's true. That's true. I you're not the only two people I know who heat their homes with wood, and I know my buddy Jason. His ears just perked up. So where can I get that wood?
Yeah. It's awesome having that local mill here, especially given what we were talking about earlier with the ash trees. They're actually turning that into a solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Probably. Yep. That's probably true. Yeah. I love my chainsaws and my splitters.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I did. I did get a battery operated chainsaw, which I
There's
said I would never
wrong
do.
With that?
Oh no, they're great for having in the truck.
They're my elbows just toast after construction for so many years, so I have a hard time getting those big ones started up.
I mean, I think that was kind of a joke saw maybe 10 years ago or something, but they're pretty cool these days.
No, yeah, good. Yes.
Yeah. I keep one in the truck for when I see stuff sitting on the side of the road, because the other place I scrap from is the parkways. Because the parks have a system, you know, they have a cutter and then they have a picker.
Yeah.
And it'll be on the ground for a few hours and they don't care if you take it.
You took my pile then.
I took your pile.
I went and it was gone.
That oak that was sitting there on the parkway? Oh, sorry about that. Keeping twins warm though.
The rest of us gas burners were like, oh, look at those weirdos out taking all that wood. What's that guy?
Look at him fighting over it.
Was he a woodchuck? What's wrong with that guy? Did he pull a chainsaw out of the back of his truck?
I know.
Of course, the one day I was going for a piece that was still hanging. It was a fallen tree in the middle of the street.
Oh.
And so I was going for a limb that was still hanging, and I bound my chain. You know,
oh no.
Above my head.
Oh no.
And then the park guys showed up.
Embarrassing.
I was such an ass. I go, I didn't even have a wrench to loosen my chain off to get my saw and stuff.
Oh no.
So I go up, I was like, I know I'm an idiot. I just want to say that from the start. But can I borrow a wrench?
Don't make fun of me, guys. Please do.
No, he got on the radio. Right, there's an idiot over here. He's got his right away.
I think I've gotten yelled at and caught, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
I have a little in with the park board, though. There's somebody that sends me the...
Don't give your secrets.
You
got a fishing hole, too. All right. I love it. Nice.
There's a pile over here. They're picking it up in the morning.
Nice. That's good. You got the inside...
we pay for it. It's ours.
It's ours,
it's
yeah.
It's ours.
And it's only going to go get burned anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's nothing. You're not engaging in some sort of terrible criminal activity.
If that's no. criminal, man. We're
right.
It's just yeah. kind of fun.
All right, you two.
Yep.
We did it.
I'm sure we could go on and on, but
it feels like it.
Maybe another time.
My wife's gonna be mad at me if I don't get home for dinner soon.
Yeah.
And the kids.
She needs help with those boys. Wrap it up.
Yeah.
You guys, this has been really fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, thanks a ton for coming in.
And thanks for educating us.
Well, likewise.
And everybody else too. So all of our listeners.
I didn't know what to expect out of a landscaper.
I had a little hint. I met him this week.
Okay.
Or last week.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere, but you know, I'm like, okay.
Hey, you meet one of us, you meet everyone.
I'm
like, we're all the same.
I saw him.
I doubt that's true.
You wouldn't be sitting here. I think
that's true.
We're very careful in who we have here.
That's true. That's true. So, Russ, thanks a ton for coming in.
Thanks for taking time.
Yeah. Lori, yeah. Sam, thank you both. Yeah. Thank you both.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening to another amazing episode of the most important show out there. Before we go, we want to thank you again for supporting us and for all the lovely things you say about us on social media. Shows like this grow with help from people like you. And remember, keep sending us your questions. We really appreciate the stories and the great insights we gain from our audience. We also want to remind you that you can buy shirts, hats, and more at JoeContractorShow.com. Be good to each other, and we'll catch you on the next show.